Session number 21735, Rule 1.
Bob Shrimpton, Rule 1. Bob, can you tell me when and where you were born, please?
I was born in Fleet, which is in Hampshire, September the 17th, 1925.
And what was Fleet like in those days?
It was a village, with about 3,000 people at the most. On a mainline railway line. A lot of the side streets were gravel, but it was a wonderful place, far different to what it is now.
How has it changed?
Well, of course, originally it was developed mainly by the military, because being close to Aldershot, a lot of retired army officers came into the area and developed the property. And then gradually it developed, because being on the main line, it became more commercial.
And what did your father do for a living?
My father was a master painter decorator, and he used to obviously on call to all the big properties in the area.
And what type of house did you live in?
We lived in a little bungalow. Originally we lived in a large house which was owned by my grandmother. But then we moved into a small bungalow and various other little properties during our lifetime.
And what about your mother? Was she a housewife?
My mother was what they used to call in those days a domestic servant. A great character, a bubbly character. And everybody used to know her and always come to her for advice, especially children, because she was a great storyteller. Great storyteller.
What type of stories would she tell? Would she make them up?
Oh, she'd make them up out of her own head. Squibby the Squirrel. What was the other one? Arthur the Acorn and all sorts of things. I remember seeing these children sitting around either on the lawn or around the kitchen table. And she would just look at them and make up these stories, and they were transfixed. I mean, she never used books. She made them up out of her head. She was a wonderful character.
And did you have any brothers and sisters?
No, I was the only child. We later, after I came out of the Navy, while I was in the Navy, we adopted another brother. My uncle had a son and his wife died and we adopted him. And so that's how it came about.
Where did you go to school?
Went to school in Fleet. I think we only had one school then. I think they've got about six now. But we just went to school. It was very, very strict, but it was a wonderful school. I remember the headmaster there was very, very strict. He had these little pins in his glasses and he used to peer over the top of them. And he used to scare the life out of us. It really did. Great disciplinarian, and it was a wonderful school. I met my wife at school at that early age. We went to school together, and that's how it all came about.
How many children were in the school?
Oh, then, in those days, we had classes of about 36, 40 children. Because if you remember, in those days, families were larger. It was nothing to have a family of six children. Nowadays, of course, you've got 2.5 children or something. But now, in those days, were very large families. So the school classes were much larger.
And what were the classes like? What would they teach you?
Oh, the basics. The 3 hours... and very strong on religion, but physical education, of course. But they were very, very strict on the actual reading, writing, and your numerals, your arithmetic. Very strict on that.
Did you find that was a good basis?
Oh yes, much easier. Mind you, we didn't have computers and we didn't have calculators in. We started off with a slate in a frame and a slate pencil, and it was great fun. But we had to learn the real hard way.
And did you enjoy your time there?
Oh, I loved it. I loved it at school, especially sports. The playground was made it wasn't a tarmac playground, concrete. It was cinder, and if you fell over. Believe me, in those days we wore shorts until you were about 10 or 12, and, some of the grazes were horrific.
So what sports did you play?
Mainly football. My father was a semi-professional footballer, and so naturally I went into football. But anything that was around running about, that was my life.
And were a lot of the children into sport? Did they enjoy it?
Oh yeah, I mean my wife, Rosemary, she was a great athletics. She was never beaten over 100 yards or 400 yards. I mean, I think all the children in those days were much more sport orientated. Though, of course, we didn't have the facilities to carry it on, to become in on the top line.
Was it encouraged by the school and the community?
Oh, yes, it was highly encouraged. I mean, school, village fetes and that sort of thing always involved children's sports days. They would put all their efforts into flat racing and rounders and all that sort of, and hockey, although I think they called it shinty in those days, which was a lethal game because you get a, I know my wife got belted around the head with a shinty stick and was rushed to hospital, but it was marvellous, pretty marvellous.
And did you celebrate things like Empire Day?
Oh yes, Empire Day was always a half day off school. We went in the morning and you celebrated Empire Day with the national anthems and a talk about the Empire. The governor of the butcher's shop used to come in because he discovered an old Roman ruin up on one of his farms, and he'd come in and tell us, oh, I think I must have heard this story about 100 times. And then he'd say, where's my glasses? And all the children would say, they're on your forehead, sir. He had the habit of pushing his glasses up on his forehead. And after that, of course, you were allowed to go home for a half day. That was Empire Day. St. George's Day, that was the other one that was most important. And, of course, Armistice Day, for the First World War, that was it. Everybody had to go to church, paraded down the street. And then, of course, after that, even when I left, different war efforts, they would support that as well.
So at that time, what impressions did you gain about the Empire?
Well, we knew that the Empire was vast, because we had in the schoolroom, we had these big war maps, and all the various parts that were coloured in red, they are parts of the British Empire, we knew them all. Mind you, we didn't have the research in those days to tell us what they actually produced and how the people lived. All we knew was that they were parts of the British Empire, that was really marvellous.
And what about the First World War? What impressions did you glean when you were a schoolboy about the First World War?
Well, I knew a bit about the First World War because one of my uncles served in the Royal Navy during the First World War. My other mentor was a bachelor that lived next door to us, and he served on the Queen Elizabeth at the Battle of Jutland. And he was a bachelor, and my mother used to clean for him and cook for him and that sort of thing. And he inspired me in those early days about the Navy. We didn't know a great deal about, I think it came later, the horrific part of war. I think you absorb that later. I think it washes over your head when you're in your very early years.
So would he tell you stories of the First World War and the actions he was involved in?
Yeah, he did. But he told me more about life aboard a ship. He was, apart from the fact that I was in the skating movement then, he was a great one for talking about naval, what he called chores, splicing, rope knotting, and all these sort of general everyday events that he had to go through, and I think that was a really a great learning curve for me.
Did it inspire you with thoughts of the Navy?
Oh, without a doubt. The majority of my uncles, I had one in the Navy, but the majority of my uncles and my father, who served in the Hampshire Regiment, they were all Army. We lived near Aldershot, Army garrison. Everybody thought, well, eventually probably go into the Army. And I thought, no way, I'm going into the Navy.
Did your relatives tell you anything about their Army service?
Oh, yes. I mean, they were often home on leave. I mean, One was a regimental sergeant major in the Royal Medical the Royal Medical Corps. Wonderful character. Used to come round to my mother to taste some of her dandelion wine. Probably get off on his bike and then probably fall off again. But they used to talk quite a bit about their army life and that sort of thing. But because they were in barracks quite close in Aldershot.
And had your father served in the First World War?
No.
At the time then, Fleet was, would there be a fairly big military presence with its proximity to Aldershot?
Well, yes, but you've got to realise Fleet is like a satellite from Aldershot, and it was more or less the fact that the property was bought up by retired Indian Army officers, and you had colonels and lieutenant colonels and majors all coming into the area that were still serving in Aldershot. But we had close links with the military then.
And with at that time, we're talking about the 20s and the 30s, was there any signs of, say, unemployment in the area?
No, there wasn't, because you didn't build up large areas of industrial employment around here, but you had agriculture, you had the sawmills. You had a great number of people working at the rail depot because of the coal, and you had a lot of merchants around here. And you remember in those days, the merchants had to deliver the supplies. You didn't go to the shop as such. A majority of your supplies was delivered, so you need that was employment as well.
And you mentioned you were in the scouting movement. What did you do while you were involved with the scouts?
Well, they started in 1934, and I'm still involved. I went all the way through scouting, and there's a side project of that, a side section of that. I found it most useful when I went into the Navy, particularly in my training days, because I remember going into a Nissen hut then HMS Collingwood, and there you had a long hawser through the centre of the hut. And on it was hanging various tines of rope. And the chief petty officer would say, right, there's your list of knots on the wall there. I want you to tie all those in that piece of rope, one at a time. Well, after 2 or 3 minutes, he said to me, what are you doing looking out the window? There was a gun crew doing practice outside. I said, what's just happened? He said, what about your knots? I said, I've done them. And I put all 6 knots in one piece of rope. And it was hanging. And he said, where did you learn that? I said, in the skating movement. I said, one of my instructors was a rear admiral. Oh, he said. Right, he said, you can instruct the class. I'll go for a cup of tea. And he disappeared. So it showed me that the fact that a lot of skating skills that we learned in the disciplines was a great asset. I mean, even on board HMS Belfast, there was a deep-sea rover crew. Members that had been in scouting, and we formed a rover crew. And wherever we went, if there was a scout group being operated, we'd go ashore and meet them. And it was a great effort.
So in the 1930s, it must have been a very different type of movement, though, from the one today, was there?
It was different, but the principles were exactly the same. The only thing that's happened now, it's become modernised. I mean, in those days, you got your handyman badge, your cook's badge, your ambulance badge. Now you can get your astronomer's badge, you can get a computer badge. So we've moved with the times, which you have to do. But basically, the principles are exactly the same, the basic principles.
Did you go away to camp with the scouts?
Wherever there was a chance to camp, I was away. If the scouts weren't going camping, I went on my own. I mean, hiking and camping, anything that was outdoor activity was brilliant. So I suffered from asthma when I was a very young lad, and an old doctor in Fleet said to my mother, he loves camping, let him sleep out on the lawn throughout the year, and I never went indoors for a year, and I never suffered from asthma in my life since then. Breathing the fresh air.
Was the Scout movement more patriotic in those days?
More patriotic. I don't think it was more. I think it's exactly the same as it is now. My duty to God in those days, my duty to God and the King, is now my duty to God and the Queen. And I think it's still the same. I think the basic thing is exactly the same.
And did you have any other hobbies?
Well, apart from football and making things with my hands. I mean, I was always in the workshop, either helping my father fix his motorbikes or building something or doing something. I've got to be doing something with my hands all the time.
Your father had motorbikes?
He was mad on motorbikes. He used to test drive matchless motorcycles in these speed rallies and things like that. And the terrifying times I had with him on the back of his bike.
Because the road conditions must have been much more different in those days.
What roads? Yeah, it was. I mean, the thing is, they were mainly gravel and that sort of thing. There was one or two tarmac roads. The main roads were tarmac, but the rest were... And especially if you remember, in those days, the milk cart came around... with a horse and cart, and therefore you had ruts in the road, and if you had a good bike you could ride in the rut, but when you didn't want to turn too quick you were right.
So where had he got the interest in motorbikes from, did he ever say?
Oh, I don't know. I think he was just interested in the fact that he loved motorcycling, I suppose, because in those days it was wonderful fun, because there weren't the cars on the road. And a motorcycle was much, much cheaper to run anyway. So therefore, he became interested in motorcycling. Though I never did, not to that extent.
Was there a reason for that?
Well, I fell off two or three times. So I decided, no, that's not for me.
So when did you leave school?
I left school in... About two days after the war broke out in September 1939. My father had already was in the Hampshire Regiment. My mother was working for an Army Return Stores Depot. And I thought, well, I've got to go and earn a living. So I left school before I should have done it.
With you mentioned the war breaking out. Had you had any anticipation that there was going to be a war beforehand?
I think I did, because my father, being he was originally in the Territorial Army, and they were geared up months before. I think they sensed something was coming, and the fact is that they accelerated in their training and that sort of thing, and I think we had the apprehension that something was going to happen.
Had you got any memories of, say, the Munich crisis in 1938?
Oh yes, because the fact is, you see, although we didn't have anything like television, we had radio, and my father and mother always listened to the political broadcast of Chamberlain and that sort of thing, and everybody in the village said, you know, it's going to happen, it's going to happen. They sensed. I don't know whether it was the fact that we were all fairly closely attached to the military. But we'd seen the gearing up going on in Aldershot. And so I think everybody had a feeling that something was going to happen.
And do you have any memories of that summer before the war broke out?
I think it was a very hot summer, if I can remember. But I don't think I have any vivid memories of it. The fact that I started doing evening more... paper rounds and evening work and weekend work, and I think it went washed over my head a little bit.
Did you hear Chamberlain's broadcast?
Yes, I did, and it you can remember it today, and obviously on television, various war programmes, it's been resounded out, and I don't think anybody can listen to that voice and not recognise exactly who that sonorous voice of his, you know. I mean, and we just sat there frozen by the radio. And my father had already gone off to Aldershot. And my grandmother, who was still living with us then, she just stood up. She said, well, that's it. Come on, we've got to do the washing up. You know, that's how it washed, you know, that's how it took them.
How did it affect you?
I think it's probably childhood boyish excitement. Something was going to happen. And my mother looked at me and she said, I hope it doesn't last too long. Because being an only son, she thought, you know, I would just disappear. And my grandmother said, it'll take as long as it takes. It'll take as long as it takes, you know. I always remember vividly those words.
She sounds very practical.
I think you'll find that in those days, all people were practical. They had to be. They couldn't depend on washing machines and this and that. And problems they had to work them out themselves. There was no counsellors and there was nobody going to. You worked out yourself.
So what was the general feeling in Fleet at the time with the declaration of war?
I think everybody was pretty placid because being close to a military town, they were all associated with the military. And they knew that that was their job. So I don't think it worried us all that much. We weren't a dense population, but I do know that everybody started digging air raid shelters in the bottom of their gardens and this sort of thing. But the local council, I remember, set up flag days for this and flag days for that. They were really into it, you know, really into it.
So did that start virtually right away after the declaration of war?
More or less. It was incredible. Because you've got to remember, a lot of them were veterans of the First World War. And they knew exactly what it was going to be like. And so they said, well, whatever however long it takes, we've got to be ready. And they were all practical ex-military people.
Did you sense more apprehension amongst the older generation rather than yourselves who were younger?
Well, I think when you're younger, it's the excitement that carries you through. I don't think you can't comprehend the horrors of war and the physical suffering that you have to put up with in your everyday life. I don't think you visualise that when you're a young person. So I think it was more a sense of excitement that we were going to fight the enemy and all this sort of thing. I think that was slightly the difference. It's only when you got into the hard rough of it, you realise that it wasn't quite so exciting as you first thought.
And with any of the regulations, did they come into effect quite soon? I'm thinking of things like issues of gas masks and the blackout and that sort of thing.
They came a little bit later, but I think they already had certain regulations already in place. And I think the gas masks, I can't remember exactly when we issued them, they came to the school and issued ours. But rationing came a little bit later. But I think our parents were more practical because I know my mother and grandmother started hoarding up certain pieces. Instead of going buying one thing, they'd buy two and put one in the cupboard. I think they had that perspective that things might get a bit tight at times.
And, say with the blackout, was that, did you have a blackout at home?
Oh, yeah. I remember my grandmother and my mother standing outside on the yard outside with bits of batten, banging in nails, and they were putting up this blackout material, which you could buy by the yard from the tailors in Fleet, and they were drawing, pinning it on, and they were going in, measuring up, and then they had wedges on the windows still, so you could put it up, turn the wedges, and hold the blackout curtain up. And each night they were put up as soon as it got dark, and because you had the warden coming along with that strident call, put that light out! but then there was candles put in every room, because in those days, we only had one electric light bulb and one plug. That was all we were allowed in those days when they first built the houses. And so we had candles put around, you know.
You mentioned the wardens. Was there much done for air raid precautions in Fleet?
Well, yes. I mean, well, everybody helped themselves. Not it was done to a certain extent by council authorities, but they were advised what to do, and they were helped. The army brought in sheets of corrugated iron, which you could go up to the depot and get sheets of corrugated iron, and you built your own. And they advised you as to how to turn your kitchen table into a safety area by putting thick planks on the top and drape heavy curtains down the side and all this sort of thing. Oh yes, so there was a lot of practical thoughts there. I mean, in retrospect now, it was very crude, but it could be effective.
Did you take any precautions at home for air raids?
We did exactly the same thing. We also, my mother went out and bought a stirrup pump, and we had bags and buckets of sand on the yard. So we were reasonably prepared.
Was everybody as organised around you?
Oh, yes. There was a great community spirit. I mean, if somebody up the road was struggling with something, somebody would go and help them. There was a great community spirit, much, much more than there is now. I think, if you come to think of it, it's only in times of tragedy that you get community spirit. And any other time, you'll just walk past somebody. But nowadays, if there's somebody, in those days, if somebody was in any sort of problem, somebody would go and help. There was a community spirit there.